I'm Torstein Vidal. I live in Nuuk in Greenland, and I'm here to write my second novel after the first novel about the terror incidents in Norway back in 2011. And I'm also here to experience the amazing nature and the wilderness and ice and stuff up here in Greenland, because I'm interested in climate and nature and how we're going to go into the future from here.
Yeah, so whereabouts are you in Greenland? It's quite a big country, isn't it?
Yeah, this is the west coast. It's ice free actually all year round, because of the part of the Gulf Stream, or the Gulf of America Stream, or whatever you call it now. And Nuuk is the capital of Greenland, where all the shenanigans happen, you know, when it comes to integration with America and disintegration with Copenhagen, Denmark.
I mean, most of us have never been there. Can you just tell us what daily life is like in Greenland?
Oh, I would say, apart from the fact that there are no roads or railways going out of the city, it's kind of like an ordinary town of about 30,000 people. People have cars, there are buses, but you cannot sort of leave the city. So that puts a constraint on the level of crime and stuff, because if you steal a bicycle or whatever, you cannot go anywhere with the bicycle. You cannot send it to Eastern Europe, or so it's kind of more quiet, less stressful. People have slightly more time than in other capitals, and it's also, you know, snow and ice for maybe 7 or 8 months of the year. Yeah.
Yeah, I wonder, because we have here in Bristol, we have a pretty bad drug problem. We have got the problem being that we've got cheap drugs and quite a lot of people come here. So you've got a mixture of homeless living in caravans and homeless in shop doorways, as well as, you know, people who are real kind of casualties of society, mentally ill and people like that. I mean, I don't imagine they would survive 5 minutes in Greenland.
Yeah, we actually have a bit of a homeless problem, but what happened, I think, during the pandemic, actually, they built some new, you know, new built shelters for them. And one of the reasons we have homeless people here is that Nuuk is growing very fast in terms of population and businesses and that kind of thing. That's a big economic growth, and lack of workers, actually. So it's kind of a boom town in that way. At least that's my impression. So a lot of people sleep on each other's couches and stuff because there are so few available apartments. Yeah.
Look, I'm sure most people have guessed why I've contacted you, Torstein, and that is because of this bizarre threat by Donald Trump to take over Panama and the Panama Canal and also Greenland. So how's it gone down there?
Well, you know, the Greenlanders and the Inuits, they're pretty stoic people. You know, they are not panicking like people in Copenhagen and in the EU cities and countries. So how it goes down here is more like, yeah, that's interesting. You know, we are also, we have been for a number of decades in a transition into more, ever more independence of Denmark. And I would just like to take you down the road of Danish colonization history for the Nordic countries, right? So Norway became free from Denmark in 1814, following the Napoleonic Wars. And we got our constitution in May 1914. That's why we celebrate 17th of May. Iceland got free from Denmark in 1944. following World War II, where there were some German attempts, and the English, I think, occupied the island during the war. But then Greenland has been under Denmark ever since 1721, so it's been a long time as a colony and lately as a self-governing territory. And me, as a Norwegian, of course, I'm supportive of their efforts to go all independent. That's what I vote for when I go voting here in Greenland. And the way I see the overtures from Washington, I'm thinking this is kind of an opening salvo, you know, what do you call that? Gunboat diplomacy or whatever. And the president didn't actually say that he wanted to take Greenland in military force. It was more like a combined question, also incorporating Panama Canal, where they may have to use weapons, right? It's not likely to be the situation in Greenland or with Greenland. So Denmark, Copenhagen, they are very worried about, first of all, they have a severe case of TDS, Trump Derangement Syndrome, so that everything he says is sort of the worst thing ever all the time. But also it's more like an attack, quote unquote, on Denmark than it is on Greenland. And the way I interpret signals from the politicians here in Greenland, it's more like it's opening up the room for a conversation about how fast we want to go independent and under what terms. You know, America already has the space base up in Thule in northwest Greenland. So they've always had an army base up there, and now it's a space base after the first Trump term. Just changed into the Space Force. And both Greenland and Denmark have always been in NATO. So that means, you know, it's not like we haven't had any US presence here before. It's more like a continuum. And the most realistic prospects for the future for expanding military presence is that one or two new naval bases may appear on the East Coast. I can see that into the future, like 5 or 10 years from now. They would want to sort of police the East Coast, where all the transpolar shipping lanes go. And that can, of course, also be used for search and rescue, right? So I don't think it will be a war fighting kind of force. It's more like we need some presence of some coast guards and that kind of stuff on the East Coast anyway.
Yeah, so what Trump has actually said is, I think we're going to have it, he said about Greenland. And he says the island's 57,000 residents, quote, want to be with us. I think the people want to be with us, he said. I don't really know what claim Denmark has to it, but it would be a very unfriendly act if they didn't allow that to happen because it's for the protection of the free world. I think Greenland will get, because it has to do with freedom of the world, Trump continued. It has nothing to do with the United States, other than we're the one that can provide freedom. They can't. So, I mean, he's pretty, pretty adamant that this is. I wonder, and I don't know if this is how this has gone down in Greenland, but there is a sort of split developing, isn't there, between the European NATO and the United States. And it might be that he's thinking, if we're just going to abandon Europe, Trump said in his first term, talked about leaving NATO, that he's thinking, well, actually, this would be a bit dangerous because we would want to make sure that we didn't lose Greenland at the same time. It's very close to us in North America.
You're very right, Tony. And I think what is going on, sort of on a deeper level, is that the new administration, the new America, they have realized that the multipolar world is here already, and there's, that it's a double nature of the America thing. You have America as a nation, but it's also an empire. You all have to know that, don't you? So it's an empire, but the new America, as I understand it, they want to pull back from the empire business and, let Russia and China have their spheres of influence. And Washington now wants to concentrate on sort of their hemisphere, where Greenland is an integral part. But when it comes to actual changes in policy in Denmark, I don't think it's a very big change because they already have the highest responsibility for the safety of the area, right? As the head of NATO, so it's like the Americans of yesteryear and the Americans of today or tomorrow will look the same and hang out in the same space, basically. And they always have had the main responsibility for the security of the island, right?
Also, this week, it'd be interesting to get your comments about Trump's comments about the Ukraine war. The British Prime Minister said he thinks we should send troops to Ukraine. I'm not sure if the troops want to go, will go if he tells them to. Quite often, when Tony Blair said we're sending the commandos into somewhere or other, Afghanistan or wherever, a few months later, you'd look at your watch and you thought, well, they still haven't left. Because they don't necessarily do as the politicians tell them anymore, particularly after the whole weapons of mass destruction, with Iraq, the intelligence people have to prove things sometimes before troops will just go willy-nilly anywhere. Anyway, so there are some checks and more checks and balances from the military these days. But anyway, this week Trump has said Zelensky has done a terrible job. This is very much at odds with what the European powers have been saying. He said that he was accusing him of taking advantage of the United States, and done a terrible job leading his war-torn country, also labeling him a dictator. So I wonder what do you make of this? Looking from Greenland over to Europe, and the horrible quagmire that's happened in Ukraine. A modestly successful comedian, says Trump, Vladimir Zelensky talked the United States of America into spending $350 billion to go into a war that couldn't be won, that never had to start, but a war that he, without the US and Trump, will never be able to settle. That's what Donald Trump posted on Truth Social on Wednesday this week. Anyway, what do you make of it?
Well, what you've seen in the past couple of years is, in a way, the final capitulation or the failing of the American Empire, right? With European powers being a part of that empire, and they kind of failed on the war path down there in Ukraine. And what you're seeing now with the European Union is it's become almost like a rump empire, right? A leftover part of the American Empire that these days doesn't really know what to do with itself. And the Munich conference and the speech of J.D. Vance was an amazing historical kind of clash of two ways of thinking. I think one of the reasons it was such a big shock for the Europeans is that they had actually not expected that it was possible for Donald Trump to come back, because all their media had been poo-pooing and ridiculing Trump for like 8 or 10 years, and there was sort of no way that he would ever be that popular in America. So little did they know it would be a landslide in America. And yeah, I see that Ukraine war episode as sort of the last attempt for the Western powers or the empire to go to Moscow and to split up Russia into 100 tiny districts, which was their stated goal or dream. I'm pretty sure it is the last part, last chapter of the US Empire. And I think many people, at least people I've been talking to in Scandinavia, are happy to see America retracting back to their own kind of part of the world, and getting another role in geopolitical affairs.
Well, yeah,
You
but they're
know,
not
like,
doing that in the Middle East. They're talking about turning Gaza into some sort of American holiday resort. But
yeah,
anyway, look, in
but for.
Scandinavia, but I don't want to get sort of into Middle East straight away. But in Scandinavia, how has this all gone down? You know, because you've had Sweden and Finland going over to join NATO. I just wonder if people in Scandinavia think that's a good plan, that they've had enough of being neutral.
I think it's a terrible plan. As I said, it's the very last days of the US Empire, and joining NATO now after being peaceful with Russia for 800 years is a very, very bad idea. And they also may make themselves out to be the number one target for any potential attack from Russia because of their proximity to Moscow, right?
Yeah, do you want to say something about Middle East Gaza? Because the Americans clearly are carrying on getting involved there.
I was at the pro-Palestine demonstration a year ago, and it was nice to be with like-minded people. But the whole thing is, to me anyway, it's been just too much, and I kind of just left it to other people to sort out because you know, it's like the same old, same old. No hope in any
Well,
direction,
no, I
I
mean,
think.
even I mean, Alan, oh gosh, what was his second name? Hart, who'd been a BBC correspondent and an ITV, a panorama filmmaker, and he'd known many of the Israeli prime ministers. I remember asking him, how is it going to be solved, this one? And he said, it's never going to be solved, which is a bit terrible, a bit sad to hear. But anyway, look, let's just look at, you're in a pretty good position there up in Greenland to tell us about what's going on with the climate and the ice sheet, you know, the Arctic. So how's it all going? Can you give us a little report, an update?
Yeah, I was on the Bristol radio station some years ago, 2016, I think, and talking about it. And you know, there have been some experts who have been making unrealistic predictions, I think we can say now. And I think one of the reasons that they have made those is that even though you know a lot about oceanography and the oceans and ice and climate and stuff, you're not necessarily a very good expert at statistics and projections and you know how things go further along, because those are kind of two different disciplines, right? So yeah, I follow the data for the ice in particular for one reason, and one reason alone, is that 10 years ago or so, I found out that I could not trust anyone in politics or in the media or any pundits at all about climate and where we were going. So the only way to kind of figure out what is going on is to look at the hard data from Antarctica and from the Arctic. And lately, I also added statistics for all the glaciers in Himalaya and the Andes Mountains. You know, all the monitored glaciers of the rest of the world, and I've got a pretty good picture of how fast or how slow it's going. And newsflash, it's not an imminent collapse, but it's kind of steady as you go, and also exponentially increasing meltdown. I think that's fair to say. And also, we're opening up sort of the Northwest Passage for shipping, and the Northeast Passage have been open for half the year for a decade or so already, along the Siberian coast. And the big efficiency dream or target in the future is that you can actually go over the North Pole itself, which is, of course, the shortest way from Japan to Western Europe, is to sail through the North Pole when the last of the sea ice is gone.
Your proof is also there's another problem, and that is to make some sort of proof that this is actually man causing this, rather
But
than this is.
I don't look at the cause of it. I'm looking at the speed of the removal of the ice. So I'm kind of neutral to what makes up the cause. Actually, in many ways, nature is now the biggest source of methane and CO2 for a number of reasons. So humans are no longer the biggest cause of global warming, at least the way I see the numbers or read the numbers. So I'm just looking basically at what the ice is doing, and not trying to source it to Europe or America or China or whatever, because that's a much more complicated issue, I think.
Surely in Nuuk, you're actually in a pretty good position to actually see and chat to people who can remember where ice used to come to year after year to actually see it. I mean, we here in southern England, okay, so I can tell you in the 1960s, there seemed to be a lot more snow that would stay for longer, you know, sometimes for a week, sometimes for a few weeks. Now, virtually nothing this winter, for example, at all. But you're in quite a good position there to see the ice receding, aren't you?
Yes and no. Actually, one of the first things I asked the local Inuits about when I came here in 2017 was, does it use usually ice over on the fjord, or does it not? And what I heard was that this was from a 30 or 40-year-old man, and he said he could never remember it ever being sea ice here on the fjord. So the ice that we get and that I take pictures of and stuff is in many cases the ice that comes here is older than civilization itself. It's more than 10,000 years old, and it comes from the interior, from the ice sheet, and it, you know, it calves into the fjord and travels out here. That's actually what we're looking at. We're not looking at saltwater ice, we're looking at the mountain ice, right here on the west coast anyway.
So if people are interested in, I mean, you've obviously, you know, spent quite a lot of time looking into this. People are interested in trying to get an independent perspective on what's actually going on with climate change, in terms of not, as you say, in terms of the cause, but actually the effect of whatever is causing it. It could be the sun, it could be man, it could be all sorts of different things. And actually, it could be just changing, you know, that we don't really know why necessarily. Where are good places? Can you give us a few good places to go online to find out, or maybe books, that sort of thing?
Yeah, you know what we are doing is looking into the in many cases flawed or a hoax nature of climate policies. In my living memory, it's always been a lie, a hoax. Whenever a politician says that he or she has the solution and they're doing this and that, and they are going to do this when they are elected and stuff, and all of those promises, and even the suggested solutions that they come up with, like the Green New Deal and stuff, turn out to be, on closer inspection, very, very bad, and also devastating for ecology solutions. So we're looking to the two sort of sides of the climate question. You have the climate and what it's doing on itself, and then you have our lying politicians and what they are doing or not doing. And the best way to follow this is our weekly podcast on Extinctionati, which you can find on YouTube and Rumble. And we're also on Substack, extinctionati.substack.com, where you can get the full podcast history and also some written articles around this stuff. And we have
Can you
the
spell
best
that? Can you spell it?
Extinctionati, it's like extinction, and ATIRT on the end, and .substack.com.
Okay, Torstein Vidal, applying for his American passport. Thank you very much for joining us.
Thank you, Tony. It's a pleasure as always.